Hello everyone, what's going on? This is Crankcast, this is season 2, episode 11 of our weekly motorcycle podcast. I'm your host, Tudor, and it's good to have you back, everyone. So just gonna get some quick plugs. This is the official podcast of the Crank It channel. You can find us on YouTube at Crank It, of course, or on whatever podcast listening platform of choice. You can also find us on YouTube at Crankcast. We also have a TikTok, that's crank_it, and then an Instagram, crank.it. These are all the shameless plugs. But yeah, welcome to another exciting episode. Not as many releases, actually. We're not going to talk about any bike release in particular, but a lot of racing stuff. So if you are into motorcycle racing, then this podcast might be right for you. That being said, let's quickly go through the news topics and do a bit of a recap, and then we're going to dive into every single one of them. So the first one is KTM extends its MotoGP contract. Also racing-related, Marc Marquez will not actually take place in the first stage of MotoGP. That's some interesting news for sure. Other racing news is John McInnes might actually take part in the 2022 Isle of Man TT race. Then we have some news, I guess, about the Triumph TE-1 prototype, which is a prototype electric motorcycle from Triumph, with some collaborations, of course. Then finally, the last bit of news for this week is actually KTM again, because they are teaming up with Varta, which is a well-known battery manufacturer. Now, instead of blast from the past, because to be fair, I didn't enjoy that section as much as I thought I would. I always find it a bit of a chore, and at the end of the day, I want this podcast to be enjoyable, right? Both for you, the audience, which I'm very respectful about, but also for myself, right? I do this for fun, and as long as something isn't fun any longer, then it really begs the question, why am I doing it? So we're changing it up a bit. So instead of Blast from the Past, where we talked about an old motorcycle, we have a section called Jibber Jabber. This is going to contain rants. It's going to contain stuff that maybe grind my gears and stuff like that. Or just smaller topics, right, that don't really deserve a specific podcast dedicated to them, but I wouldn't necessarily do an entire video on Crank It about them. So today is the cost of bike builds and how they are sort of misrepresented on YouTube a lot of times. And then at the end of the day, we're going to have some Crank It updates. We have some really exciting updates about the Supermoto mainly. But to get to those, we're going to have to wait all until the end. Now, that being said, let's jump straight into things and into this first news topic of this week. And that is KTM related. So, KTM extends its contract with MotoGP. Now, if you don't know, just as a quick recap, right? KTM as a team started in 2017 racing in MotoGP, which is the best sort of racing class. So we have multiple classes. You have Moto3, Moto2. KTM already had a presence in those smaller classes. But then ever since 2017, they built this team that competes at the highest level possible. Now, first years, they were a bit rocky. I mean, they weren't rocky given that this company basically had no experience in MotoGP before. But, you know, as any new contender into the sort of prototype world, they were not the best. But then this last year, they surprised us, right? They surprised us with 3 wins and 5 additional podiums. So Brad Binder won at Brno for the factory team, and then Miguel Oliveira won for Tech Free, which is their satellite KTM team. Won 2 ones, actually, the Grand Prix of Portugal and then Styrian GP, which I think it's in Austria, if I'm not mistaken. So last year, KTM had a really good season, and so now they're basically extending their contract. This contract is extended up until 2026, which sort of brings them in line with the more mainstream, I guess, manufacturers, you could call them, like Yamaha and Honda and stuff like that. So now they basically all have these contracts up until 2026. So we are sure that we're going to have orange bikes all the way to 2026. That's cool. That's exciting, in my opinion. And yeah, I actually wrote down here that if you think about it, it would be a true shame for them to drop out now, right? They've had all these years of development, and they are finally on a good track, right? I mean, not really finally. Like, in this world of MotoGP, having 3 or 4 years of development it's not much, really. It's like building an F1 car from scratch, right? 3 or 4 years just isn't that big of an amount of time. So this is what KTM had. And given the results they had last year and how competitive they were, it would be a really shame for them to drop out now. I can see a bright future for this team ahead. And it's not just because I love this brand, but because facts speak for themselves. They were a really good team. They were a better team than Honda, like in the Constructors Championship in 2020. So yeah, 2021 up all the way to 26, KTM go to the moon, as they say in today's crypto world. I definitely think there are some exciting years to come out of this team. They have some amazing talents, so why not? And speaking of talents, this is one of the greatest advantages of KTM Red Bull. They offered sort of vertical integration. So a rider can actually start in Moto3 with KTM and then can switch over to Moto2 with KTM. Now they can switch over to MotoGP with KTM and be extremely competitive. So they are all used with the people there. They're used with their teams. They are used with the atmosphere and with the way of working. So it's easier for a rider to progress through the ranks of something like KTM, because they offer a step for everyone, right? For every level of rider, starting from Moto3. That's nice, and that's something that not all teams have. Actually, most teams do not offer this sort of option, this sort of vertical integration. And so I do think KTM is onto something. I can't wait to see. And actually, the best example of this is Brad Binder. So the rookie, right? So basically, 2020 was Brad Binder's first year in MotoGP. He managed to get a win in Brno, right? And some good positions in other races as well. But what's more amazing is that he only was with KTM, right? So he started in Moto3 with KTM, Moto2 also with KTM, and now this KTM racing school, if you want to call it, brought him to be a winner in MotoGP. That's amazing. I love it. They support young talents, which is also amazing. They offer them a full path towards the end. So good job, KTM, and I'm excited about this contract extension up until 2026. Now we're actually going to stay in this racing world, but we're going to go to Honda, because apparently Marc Marquez will not take place and not take part for the start of the first race of 2021. So I actually had a note down here, right, in my notes, that this means that we're going to have an exciting first race. It's a joke, because last season when Marquez was absent, we had one of the most exciting MotoGP seasons in history. Had so many different podium takers, so many different winners, so many unexpected like turns of events, that it was just amazing. So yeah, we might have that in the first race as well now. But serious though, why is Marquez going to miss? So if you're not really up to date with this, so Marquez had a big crash in 2020. And so he actually had the crash at one race, then he tried to continue, and he had another crash which sort of ended it for him in the 2020 season. And so basically most of the 2020 season, Marquez spent recovering from that accident. And it was a pretty bad one, because apparently he will not take part in the first race of the 2021. So that's a long recovery process, right? And it's definitely not nothing. He rushed it back then, right? So the proper thing to do, I guess, was when he had his first crash, he should have just waited. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a racer, but I think it all started with that. But he didn't, and when he had the second crash, he just made everything way worse. It's good for him, right? It's good for him to heal in the long term. Look, you might be a hater of Marc Marquez. I'm personally not his fan. But I can appreciate him as a racer. And as a personality, yeah, I don't really care that much about him. But as a racer, he's really good. He's really talented. He worked a lot for where he's at. And he's a darn good rider. One of the best riders in the world, that's for sure. And so it would be a shame to lose him, right? Just because he's rushing things. So I'm glad that he's taken a step back. And I'm actually glad that he's taken a step back in order to get his full recovery. That's good, and I can appreciate that, right? I do not mind missing Marquez for a few more races if that means we're going to have a lot more Marquez in the future years, right? Competing for titles and having strong battles with other competitors. I don't want to lose talent in the sport. And to be fair, I don't think anyone actually wants that. Now, this, that being said, I am curious who took this decision, because this is not Marquez style, right? So Marquez could have taken part in the first race, but I genuinely think that someone in his team or someone close to him was like, hey, dude, stop trying to kill yourself. Stop trying to paralyze yourself, maybe even worse. And think about your future. I mean, this is not a Marquez thing to do. Marquez is the type of person that sort of rushes into things, that just goes, jumps head first inside a pool, not knowing how deep that pool is. But if it was his own option, that then, oh my God, he grew up, right? Quite a lot, especially his personality. And if it wasn't, then it's still to be appreciated, because it means he listened to some other people, to some of his people that counsel him. So overall, I think it's a good idea, right? If he needs the time to heal, give him all the time to heal. That does make me wonder, though, what's going to happen in the next races? So, okay, he's going to miss the next one. Will he miss others as well? Will he miss the second or third one? We don't know yet. We don't know about the first one. And then tied to that sort of is, okay, so I forgot to change the production issues again. So, what I was actually saying is that now Marquez, in this case, the other racers, let's put it this way, the other racers had a lot more time to train, right, and to adapt to their bike, to the conditions and stuff like that. Marquez doesn't have as much, right? His recovery period meant a lot of time off the bike as well. So that makes me wonder if he's going to return in the second race, for example. How will his return be? Will his return be, again, fighting for a top spot, like in the podium, top three, top five people? Or will he sort of take it easier? Not willingly, but just because, well, he hasn't had as much practice as other people because, you know, recovery. Like, you, as a perfectly healthy person, of course, are going to have much more chances to practice and to get better than someone who has an injury, for obvious reasons, I would say. But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see what Marquez is going to do and when are we actually going to see him back. Now, moving on to the third topic is John McGuinness will... There's a chance that we're going to see him back at the Isle of Man TT in 2020. So, let's go back a few years, right? So the Isle of Man was supposed to take place in 2021, but then it was cancelled. And then it was basically postponed towards 2021. When it was cancelled again. So now we have the confirmation that for this year, we're going to have no Isle of Man TT. Now, yes, that is sad, of course. And what would have been sad is that the legend, that's John McGuinness, actually had plans to retire, right? He actually said, you know what, after, like, in 2022, when the next race should take place, he would be 50 years old. And at that point, look, he proved his point, right? We all know who he is. He's legendary, right? The amount of stuff this guy achieved is just amazing. But yeah, he wanted to retire because at this point, I mean, I kind of get him, right? He's 50. He's 50. He's won everything. He's done everything. And yeah, you might be asking the question, right? Is he maybe stretching his luck at this point? Because look, he's been racing the Isle of Man for a lot of years and he hasn't died. I'm not being overly dramatic, right? It's a good year at the Isle of Man when somebody doesn't die. Let's put it that way. It's one of the most dangerous races, if not the most dangerous race in the world. It's hardcore, right? It's like Dakar Rally level of hardcore. And so, yeah, getting to 50 with all his realizations... it's quite something, and it makes you wonder, maybe his luck is coming to an end. And the thing is, though, with the Isle of Man and with getting older, is that it's a bit different from other sports, and here's my opinion on why. In regular track racing, right, you get, even as a youngster, you get a lot of time to practice. You get a lot of practice in, you can basically go whenever you want to a track, and just with enough money, you can do it. In these sort of street racing situations, track racing isn't exactly the same. So yes, you can train to get better on a sports bike, but it's not going to be the same as racing on public roads, even if they're closed off. And so in this case, I think that experience matters a lot more than it does in other racing disciplines, like MotoGP or like World Superbike, for example, because here it's more important to know how to tackle the streets than in other places. And if you think about it, training for such a a race isn't that easy. You can't just go to any public road and like floor it. I mean, you can, but you definitely shouldn't, because you're gonna die even if you're really good and the law and stuff. So no, don't do that. But my point is, it's really hard to train for these exact situations. Like, you can train in races, sure, but no one's gonna close a road just for you to go up and down for 3 hours, for example. It's harder to train for this. And so in this place, the more races you have, the more experience you have, and so the more it's gonna be in your advantage, more so than in regular circuit racing. I think so, at least. So yeah, basically the conclusion is that John McKinnis actually thought twice about his retirement, and we might actually see him back in 2022. So we might not see a retired John McKinnis. There are these sort of legends in some of his motorsports that I'm amazed about. So we have people like John McGuinness, and the one I can also think about is Graham Jarvis in hard enduro, which is an even more physical sport. But he's about 40 something years old, and he's winning it. He's fighting for championships, and now he owns a team and stuff. I love this sort of underdog. It's sort of like seeing Valentino Rossi in MotoGP as well. Yes, he's probably the oldest dude out there, but as long as he's kind of competitive, at this point I don't care if he's the first or on the podium. As long as he can hang in there, hey, all the power to him at his age and at what he's done. He's got nothing. These guys have nothing else to prove. And that's amazing. I can only appreciate people like this. But it's time to go a bit off topic from racing, because we've talked about racing enough. So it's time to actually go into motorcycles and into products. And it's time to go to England, because we are going to talk about a Triumph that you can't actually buy, and in this shape you're probably never going to be able to buy. So talking about the Triumph TE-1 prototype sketch. So what this is, really quickly, it's an electric motorcycle. That's it. No, okay, it's not just it, but yeah, it's a prototype of an electric motorcycle, and the platform Triumph appear to have chosen is sort of their straight triple platform. So they could have done this multiple ways. They could have rendered it into something like the Rocket 3, right, which is already a heavy bike, and electric bikes are quite heavy, so they could have done that. But it appears that Triumph decided to take the naked route, so the speed triple or straight triple approach. And that being said, this is an amazing looking bike, an amazing looking rendering, at least. So I'm not complaining. And it kind of makes sense, because the naked market is huge now. It's definitely, like, Triumph is definitely selling more street triples than they're selling Rocket 3s. And not just because of the price. Naked bike motorcycle segment is huge at this point, and it's only growing. Especially with the advent of these super nakeds and hyper nakeds and really high performance naked bikes, people have realized that you can have both. You can have both extreme performance and comfort, which is what a naked bike offers and what a super bike will probably never offer, because that's not the point of a super bike. But yeah, so this one does have some cool stuff about it. So we have some sort of technical specifications about it. One of the interesting things is that Triumph is planning to use the battery case as a stress member. This is a thing that has been used with regular internal combustion engines for a while, where different bits of the chassis would bolt onto the engine, and so by doing this, the engine would become an actual stress member. It's a stress component. It's a structural component of the bike. And what Harley has been doing with the One Livewire, for example, it's different. They basically just put a battery inside a frame, which it's a valid approach. But Triumph is planning to use this sort of big rigid thing that's the battery case as a structural component of the bike. That would be amazing. I think the bike's rigidity would be really good with stuff like this. We also know that this bike is about this project is about halfway to completion, so don't expect to see this on the street anytime soon, really. So probably in a few years you might be able to see it somewhere. So the engine is supposed to deliver around 180 horsepower. And the nice thing about it is that it will only weigh 10 kilos. Now, yes, this is nice, but what I'm a bit concerned here is that in the case of electric vehicles, and especially electric motorcycles, the thing that weighs a lot is not really the engine, it's the battery. It's sort of like in a regular motorcycle, an internal combustion one, like your gas tank, you have to reverse sort of the weight of the gas tank compared to the engine. So in the case of an electric bike, basically the batteries that store your energy weigh way more than the actual engine that powers the bike. Now, it's cool that Triumph got an engine to be this light, don't get me wrong, but I'm curious about the battery pack. Now, they did say that they worked a lot for the energy density they could fill fitting batteries. And what that would translate to is basically would have much lighter battery packs, and that would be cool. True. I think it's just, we'll have to see exactly how will this pan out. Yeah, we'll have to see. Now, Triumph did say that we might see a design prototype by the end of 2021, so like a real-life prototype bike, not just a render. But of course, it's not going to be functional. Right? They have a lot of work to do with different collaborations until getting something like this out on the street. But hey, you know what? I have never ridden an electric bike, but the bike like this kind of really makes me want to ride one. And now for the final bit of news. Haha, you see that orange color? We're talking about KTM again, because KTM teams up with Varta, which is a quite big battery manufacturer. So Varta has been building batteries for a long time now. It's a European manufacturer, but they never really went into this automotive industry. So they never actually built batteries for like cars or motorcycles until now, because they signed a partnership with KTM. Now, KTM has been hinting a lot of electric stuff. If you remember, a few podcasts ago, we talked about this alliance for electrification made by a few major motorcycle manufacturers, and one of them was KTM. So it kind of really makes you wonder, what are they planning? I really want to see like what the plans are for electrification from KTM for the future. Yeah, I can't wait to see that one. Now, this is not... KTM has experimented a bit with electric bikes in the past. So we had the Freeride E, which was interesting. It was a bit heavy for what it was, and it lacked a lot of range with the bikes. Like the batteries were hot swappable, which was cool. But really, it wasn't a practical motorcycle. It was a fun machine, but you couldn't go out on the same rides with your like regular enduro buddies with the Freeride E. But they did. They did try, and the Freeride was not a bad bike. It's actually hard to find them now, and even if you find them, they're still really expensive. It's like nobody's selling them for some reason, which is odd if you ask me. What this partnership also did is that they said that Varta is not only going to build the batteries, but taking into consideration the entire sort of lifetime of it, right? So from disposing of the battery and stuff like that. So this might mean that it would be a bit more eco-friendly than other approaches. Or it might not mean anything. It's just a marketing ploy. I don't know at this point. But I think nobody does. But yeah, this was the news section. We actually only have 5 articles, but some of them were pretty in-depth. But it's time to go into the jibber-jabber section where we're going to talk about... BAM! So... what you're seeing there is my KLX 450R. But we're not going to talk about the KLX in particular. We're actually going to talk about bike builds, and I have a few things that sort of grind my gears. First of all, there are two types of bike builds. There are YouTube bike builds and bike builds you actually want. And there's a clear distinction here, because a lot of the builds you see on YouTube, they seem easy. And not only easy, but when you add up some of the parts, they don't seem that expensive. Because a lot of times it might not be, right? Putting blink on a bike and making it look good, it's easy. And it can actually be not that expensive if you take a lot of Chinese parts. But when you start to build a bike for yourself, you start to realize that, wait, you might care a lot more about how this bike rides than how it just looks. And even those looks, right? When filmed on a camera, they might look well, but when you take a bit up close and when you start feeling them, like feeling the levers and stuff like that, you realize that, well, maybe $5 levels from China aren't the best option out there. And this is a bit annoying. Like, yes, there are a lot of people that do really good bike builds on YouTube, but then there are also a lot of them that just rush them. And not only rush them, but they build this sort of fake expectation of, here's what you could build. Well, in fact, you could. You wouldn't really want to build that, would you? And the thing with that is... building it properly with amazing parts is not cheap at all, and it's something that's not portrayed enough in YouTube build videos. Some of them do, sure, but most of them don't, and I think that's a bit of a shame. When you get a lot of these sponsored parts and stuff, it's easy to just go ham on everything, just dump everything to the bike. But when you start to have your own money and to work with your own money, there are way more critical decisions that you need to take, right? Okay, am I putting this? Am I putting this one? Am I going a bit cheaper on that one or on that one? So yeah, supermoto, not only supermoto, but motorcycle builds on YouTube can be a bit deceiving from real life. And you also so you need to keep in mind that you're basically never going to get your money back, right? If you spend 5,000 euro on mods for Supermoto, you're not going to get those back in resale. You're not going to get even half of them, maybe. Maybe if you're lucky, you're going to get half of it back, but not even that. So all of the money that you spend on it is basically gone. It's not an investment. It's one of the worst investments you could do. So you have to keep that in mind. And so by doing this, I would only do something like this if you plan on keeping this bike for a long time. So if you plan on getting rid of it in 1 year, then no, don't even think about this. It's just such a waste of money. But if you plan on keeping it for more than a year, maybe, and for actually caring about this bike and keeping it longer term, then yeah, I can see it being a worthy investment for yourself. We also need to quickly go over parts, because finding parts for not so common bikes is not so easy. Like, doing bike builds on a really popular model, like an R6 track bike, yeah, that's fine. Doing it on slightly not so popular models is not that easy, because not that easy to find parts that always fit, and then you have to do fabrication and stuff like that. But then even if you decide to use these parts, and finding consumable for those, it's even harder, as it happened to me with the Supermoto, because I have these Behringer calipers in the front and I had to find brake pads for them. Now, they're not a standard size, they're not standard Brembo or something, they're Behringer specific, and Behringer is actually one of the only manufacturers that builds these pads for them, and so good luck finding Behringer brake pads. And the only place I found them in Europe was at a shop in Belgium that had some in stock. And even that was hard to find them, right? You get a lot of sketchy websites and sketchy links, but it will be way harder to find consumables for some of these parts. And when you buy a bike that's already been built, oh, that's even more fun. Because then I actually had to spend, with the Supermoto, I had to spend like half an hour trying to figure out what front caliper do I have. I know it said Behringer on there, but that's it. I had to compare sort of the list of what Behringer did. I found they did a collaboration with Easy Riders at some point, so I tried to look up what they did and what caliper did they use. After about half hour of research, and I'm a good researcher, right? I'm a programmer, so I know how to Google my stuff. Only then I found out what caliper I had, and so then I had to find out what pads would fit in such a caliper, and it was a hassle. So when you do stuff like this, expect stuff not to just be straightforward, especially if it's not the most popular platform out there, like my KLX over there. But yeah, this was the Jibber Jabber section. And now for some quick updates before we have to finish this podcast. So I actually talked to a shop about my Supermoto. So there's a chance that I might take the bike into a shop next week. That's really amazing. I cannot wait to get this bike. Most of the parts are here, actually. Actually, all of the parts are here. I need to pick some of them from the shop tomorrow. They arrived, and some of them got through with my courier today, like the air filter, which I had to order from Europe again. Graphics are incoming. So I found some decent graphics that I liked. Slightly custom, but not much. I didn't want to spend a lot of money and a lot of time on it. I still spend a bit of money on them. But they're going to come all the way from Australia. So from Australia to Europe, to Romania, where I live. It's going to take a bit of time. But yeah, we'll have to wait. I got the proof and they look pretty cool. I'm really curious how they're going to look on the bike. I can't wait for that on new plastics, new everything. I cannot wait to ride that bike, to have it finished and to be able to ride it properly. But that's beside the point. Now, thanks a lot for listening to this podcast. So I'm going to plug some stuff really quickly. So you're listening to Crankcast. You can also find Crank It, which is our main channel, where we do motorcycle films on YouTube. You can also follow us on Instagram at crank.it and then on TikTok at crank_it. That being said, this was episode 11. Thanks a lot for listening to this podcast. If you enjoyed it, then, well, you can give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to. A like on YouTube would be appreciated. You can leave a comment for whatever suggestions you might have. And you can subscribe to this channel and to the Cranky channel as well. And until next time, as always, have a good one.